Governor Walker's proposal to cut $300 million from the UW system has gotten a lot of attention since he announced his budget in February. That number has since been reduced to $250 million, but apart from higher education, the budget the governor signed has significant implications for K-12 education in the state as well.
One of the biggest changes affects Milwaukee's public schools. The law now allows Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abele to appoint individuals to oversee a number of failing schools with the possibility of more influence from independent charter companies. The budget also includes an expansion of voucher schools throughout Wisconsin. Here with us now is Aaron Richards, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's education reporter. Aaron, welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
Well, let's talk first about funding. What does K-12 funding look like under the new budget for the next couple of years?
Essentially, public schools are held flat in the first year of the budget. You could argue, well, supporters certainly do argue that that actually amounts to a cut. We all know costs go up every year. Inflation, raises the cost of everything. So being held flat in the first year, the public school advocates say, you're kind of cutting us. Certainly on the other side, folks say, it's better than the $127 million that you would have lost that was proposed in the earlier version of the budget. In the second year, public schools get a little bit more funding, but it's modest. It's a modest increase, and it's not up to the rate of inflation. There are some other, more specific budget items on that, but for the most part, that's where public schools stand right now.
Is that spending affecting school districts evenly, or are some districts getting a bit more and others a bit less?
School finance is always affected by, a lot of other factors for each district. In school, the aid that comes to schools is greatly affected by, the property wealth in the district. Where schools are getting their money from depends on the property wealth in the district, the run through the school funding formula. Most districts get some state aid as well. They get a lot more state aid if they don't have if they're not a rich property area. So certainly districts will be impacted differently. And at the moment, it's up to budget directors and the administrators of school districts to see, now that we have a better idea of where the budget is, we can go forward and, sort of plan for the future now that we know what the next 2 years are going to look like.
The state superintendent of schools, Tony Evers, had publicly asked the governor to use that veto pen for some of these education-related items. Do we know what the superintendent asked for and whether the governor responded?
Yeah, Tony Evers asked for a lot. And his veto request spanned about 14 pages, included more than 20 measures, including everything from the most controversial stuff, significantly expanding the statewide voucher program, implementing other provisions, even down to sort of nitty-gritty stuff like cutting funding to what are called cooperative education service agencies. We call them CESAs. They're like regional groups funded by the state with a little bit of state money, but mostly with money from local school districts that help school districts with training, or they sometimes provide shared special education services. That's another one. Just didn't get much attention because it's really under the radar. But Tony Evers asked for the governor to veto all of that. In the end, Walker vetoed very little when it came to the K-12 policy items in the budget. I'm not sure if he acted on any of the ones proposed by Evers.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Milwaukee Public Schools. There is a plan in this budget, which is, it's called a, in some instances, it's referred to as a takeover plan. Can you tell us about how that affects failing schools going forward?
At the moment, all of the schools that are part of the Milwaukee Public Schools family are, ultimately, they answer to the Milwaukee School Board, 9-member board elected officials. Under this plan, some of the district's lowest performing schools, those are schools that have received failing grades, or at least they've fallen into the lowest performance category on state report cards. Almost universally, these schools are very high poverty, and they have, they're in tough neighborhoods, and they've long had patterns of underachievement. Some of those schools would be turned over to the Milwaukee County Executive, but the county executive would appoint a commissioner, we don't know who that person's going to be yet, to oversee those failing schools. So those schools would answer to an independently appointed commissioner instead of the school board. The state legislation also calls for the state, the MPS superintendent, Darian Driver, to also have some direct autonomy over some of those schools. And in the coming months, we're going to see how this will actually be put into effect. It's pretty early now, you know, how this will actually shake out and what schools will be chosen for this kind of treatment is going to be a kind of a question mark, and we're watching that moving forward.
Is this model, this takeover model, one that's been tried in other states?
Absolutely. Louisiana is one of the sort of the best-known examples. There was already a state-run school district before Hurricane Katrina, but certainly after the hurricane, a lot more of those New Orleans public schools were put into this recovery district, which was not run by the traditional school board, but it was independently run. In the long term, it mostly amounts to more independent charter management companies taking over these schools and running them like independent businesses rather than as a network of schools. And that would likely be what would happen here. At least it would if it's Tennessee has a couple of these districts as well, where there's just a lot more opportunity for the schools to be independently run rather than sort of the traditional, you know, answer to a school board and a traditional school administration structure.
So just to play that out, what would happen would be the school would fail, and Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abele would appoint a commissioner to oversee the school, and that commissioner could then choose to bring in an independent outside group to run the school.
Yes. And the way the language is written in Milwaukee, it would also allow a private voucher school operator to take over the school. But they did try to limit that to say that it would have to be, they wouldn't be able to teach religion under that provision. So it's unclear if a voucher operator would step up. A lot of them are in the program because they want to teach religion in schools.
Now, you mentioned Louisiana as a state that's also trying this approach. Do we know if it's been effective at turning schools around in Louisiana?
Well, it depends on who you ask, and the research is a little bit mixed. It has not been a magic bullet by any means. On some measures, more kids are graduating in some schools. Some schools have been more successful than others. I think there are some far-reaching consequences that nobody's really sure what to make of yet. For example, a lot of the traditional teaching staff, which was a lot of Black educators, were fired as part of that whole change, and a whole lot of young white educators were brought to the city instead. And so, you know, there's some long-term effects of, you know, diversity and sort of what's going to happen later on. You know, special education services are done much differently when each individual school oversees that, and you don't have the sort of mass capacity of a district to help oversee some of those services. So in some cases, it's quite mixed.
And looking at special needs, you mentioned that. Let's talk about the special needs voucher. This was a change in the budget as well. Could you tell us what that is?
The special needs voucher program is something that conservatives had pushed in the last couple of budget cycles, and it just ran into opposition from every disability rights group, which is a big signal. You know, the disability rights groups are very interested in the well-being, safety, and betterment of kids and adults with disabilities. They really don't like this plan because it would allow a child with a disability to essentially leave the public school district and take a publicly funded voucher to go attend a private school. The spirit of that change is that some parents may be not getting the services that they think are best for their child in the public school, and so the conservatives that pushed this plan and inserted it in the 11th hour in the budget wanted to make sure that they had the funding to go and attend a private school if they wanted to. Now, there's also a change in the budget that allows, it changes the state's open enrollment program to be more friendly toward kids wanting to leave one public district for a different public district, and it says that they can't be denied because of their disability. A lot of the folks on the public school side and in the disability community said, you know what, that's enough of a change to be able to allow you out of your district to go somewhere else. But a lot of the folks on the public school sides are concerned about that, you know, that we, the more kids with special needs that sort of leave the funding system, the traditional funding system, means that, there's less money in the pot to basically serve everybody's needs. And I think there's some concern from the public school side of things as well, that the people most likely to take their child out of a public school district when they have a child with a disability could potentially be parents of kids with fairly mild disabilities that aren't that difficult to serve, and that would mean that the kids with the most significant disabilities that cost the most to help and to, you know, assist in schools would be the ones left in the public districts.
We're talking right now with Aaron Richards, education reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about changes to K-12 education in Wisconsin under the new state budget.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the changes we've been discussing? Do you think that voucher and charter schools should be expanded here in Wisconsin? Do you think these changes could have a positive influence in your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation now with Aaron Richards of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about changes to K-12 education in Wisconsin under the new budget that Governor Walker signed yesterday.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think the budget changes to education will affect your schools, your community? Do you want voucher and charter schools expanded in the state? Are you worried about funding levels for your school, the one you send your kids to, maybe the one you work at? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We go now to our callers. We've got Kim on the line in Oconomowoc. Hi, Kim.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up?
So my concern about the failing school proposal is, does that student body remain the same? Because we talk about schools that fail, but really it could be that students are bused from the school district from various areas to that school. And so if a charter school would take over, would it be the same students that made up the, quote, failing school, or would the charter school be able to start fresh and those students get pushed into the rest of the district?
Okay, interesting question there, Kim. Aaron, do you know?
There is some language in the provision passed that requires the school to serve at least, some up to a majority of students who were already in the school. I can't remember the exact language, but I know that there is attention to the fact that the school, if a new management company is invited to take over that particular public school, they are not allowed to summarily, you know, basically send all the students away and select all new ones. They do have to educate some of the kids that were there. I'm not certain if they have to educate 100% of the children that were in the school before. So that's something that we'll have to get, have to probably take a little bit closer look at. But there is some language that says that the school, you know, cannot start fresh. They are supposed to serve students that were in the school before.
Kim, thanks for the call. Next we go to Joanne joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
What is your comment?
Well, my question is whether the children in this new arrangement will have their progress academically followed year after year. I understand that this is not the case with some voucher schools today, and as it is in the public school system.
Okay, so got your question there, Joanne. Thank you for that. So Joanne asking, for children who choose to go to a charter school, a voucher school, how will their progress be tracked?
Two different answers to that. The tracking is somewhat different if a kid is in a charter school or a voucher school. That's because voucher schools are private, and at the moment, the only real performance outcome data that we have for them is when the kids take the same state test at the moment that the public school kids do. For everybody that takes that state test, it's getting harder to track from year to year because, for example, we implemented a new state test this year as part of the budget that has been thrown out because of some controversy tied to the Common Core and also the test itself. The state is now picking a new state test that everyone will take. But there's some concern about whether, you know, the budget also allows for schools to potentially pick from up to three tests. So, getting a consistent test for anybody in any school system at the moment is a little bit difficult. As far as the voucher tracking is concerned, beyond the test itself, we don't have any other performance data for them that we can get publicly. So it is, in general, harder to track all of the different kinds of performance outcomes for voucher kids that we have for charter school and traditional public school kids, because the public schools, we have more data to look at.
So, Aaron, just to follow up on the testing, so in the past, traditional schools, voucher schools, charter schools, they had to take the same standardized test. Now, going forward, it sounds as though that's no longer the case in the budget, as you said. So how many tests might we end up with?
Well, that's a little bit unclear. One of the vetoes that the state superintendent had asked for was a provision in the budget that required him, the state superintendent, to try to seek a waiver from the federal government from this provision that you administer one state test to your public schools, and to allow up to three different tests to be chosen by folks. To my knowledge and from what I've read, that was not vetoed in the budget. However, at the moment, federal law still requires a state to administer one state test to its public schools. And while federal law doesn't say anything about what private schools have to do, our own state law in Wisconsin requires the private voucher schools, those are the ones that get public money, to take the state test. So at the moment, everybody is still taking the same state test, but going forward, this is probably going to take some, take some attention to figure out what's going to happen going forward.
All right. Well, thank you for that call. And we move on next to Joan in Whitefish Bay. Joan, hi.
Hi. This is so interesting because it really is a matter of great controversy, and I certainly hope the disadvantaged children or have the people who are handicapped have good access. But I think it's really wicked to take the money from the public schools, Milwaukee Public Schools, which has always struggled to get ahead and has had in the past a wonderful reputation. And I think for charter schools or voucher schools under private management is a travesty. I really feel for Milwaukee Public Schools and have always supported and advocated for them. But thank you so much for the opportunity to talk. Thank you.
Joan, thank you for calling. And in terms of the financial aspect of some money leaving the public schools, going to charter and voucher schools, do we know what sort of impact that will have?
That's a big question mark in the Milwaukee Public Schools budget at the moment. They've built their budget based on what they think they'll get from the state and, you know, what they anticipate, and they're usually pretty good at anticipating what they'll get in local tax dollars. But the ringer in this whole thing is how the structure of taking some schools away from the authority of the district and placing them in the hands of this commissioner appointed by the county executive, how that would actually affect the Milwaukee Public Schools budget. The lawmakers that support this quote-unquote takeover plan or opportunity plan, depending on what side of the fence you're on, they say it won't have that big of an impact. MPS officials have said they're not quite sure. In the very beginning, it probably won't be much anyway. It's only about three schools would be affected in the beginning. It could be up to five schools later on. So certainly in the beginning, there aren't that many schools that would be involved. So the financial impact, whatever it is, wouldn't be huge to start with. But we'd have to see how things would look down the road.
So supporters of that motion, the people who would like to see this money going to charter schools and voucher schools, what are they hoping to achieve? What is the rationale behind sending some extra money there to help?
Do you mean for the Opportunity Schools Plan?
Right, for the Opportunity Schools Plan.
Low-performing schools. Well, in some ways, this is really rooted in a belief that the Milwaukee School Board has been dysfunctional for a long time, that the school district hasn't been able to do enough over the years to help its low-performing schools get better. The public school community and MPS workers in general take offense to that characterization. They say, you know, just improving a school takes far more than just expertise. You know, we're serving communities that are highly impoverished. Most families may not be intact. Fathers are absent. Jobs are hard to come by. This is generations of poverty and people who haven't been exposed to what good education could look like. So we're struggling with all of these other factors here. And the conservatives that push this bill really believe that we've exhausted the possibilities of, you know, reform from MPS, and that by changing the governance of these schools, by putting somebody new in charge that could shake up the staff, that wouldn't have to use union employees, that could hire fresh from, you know, worker one to however many workers you need in the school, that this could, you know, be something different that we haven't tried yet. So that's the real philosophy.
And Aaron, school accountability and how to measure that, that's been a hotly debated topic. Where did the budget leave it?
Well, we've got the testing issue. So you've got the fact that we're still figuring out what test to use for everybody, and that's going to have to be ironed out going forward. We've certainly got, on the federal level, you know, even beyond us here, we've got the No Child Left Behind bill that's trying to get rewritten in Washington, D.C. There hasn't been full consensus on that yet, but there's been some movement. We certainly have, you know, in terms of just keeping track of how all kids are doing, we've got a growing opt-out movement in Wisconsin where you've got still a small percentage of parents taking their kids out from taking the annual state test, but certainly we've seen more parents do that this year than in any other year. So there's a lot of question marks at the moment about how we're going to keep track of everybody and how, what's the best way to look at performance going forward. I think for the schools in Milwaukee that will be a part of this, you know, opportunity plan or takeover plan, you know, there will be a lot of attention paid to certainly the traditional measures that we often look at, you know, test scores, attendance, suspension rates, you know, expulsion rates. Certainly we'll be looking at all of those as well. But, of course, all of these things take several years for, you know, really any meaningful data over time to come up.
Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thank you.
That was Aaron Richards, education reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about changes to K-12 education in Wisconsin under the budget that Governor Walker signed yesterday.